I call the Environment and Natural Resources Policy and Finance Committee to order. I see we have a quorum being present members. I'm going to go ahead and see Representative Hansen, if you had a chance to look at the minutes from...
Why, yes, I have, Mr. Chair. I would move the minutes.
All right. Representative Hansen moves the minutes from February 27th, 2025. All those in favor of moving the minutes, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Minutes are carried. Members, again, we have another day that is very full. Our agenda is going to be a bit tight today, so please help me out as we're trying to get through today's agenda. We have a lot of folks that have come from a distance who have signed up to testify. Mr. Yang is going to have the two-minute timer going, and there will be an alarm, so maybe that will help as we get through that 2 minutes, and everyone will have an opportunity to address whichever bill that they would like to address and speak to today. Right out of the gate, the bills I'm going to have up are the CQB bills, so hopefully those are reasonably quick, but then of course we'll have HF 81, that's the kids ATV bill, and youth sports vehicles bill. And then after that, the last bill I was going to have on the agenda for today is 1627, and that deals more with the PFAS ban and implementation issues that we're trying to address. So hopefully we can get through all of that and get everything squared away before the end of our time. So I will, though, just quickly mention that if we need to come back at 5, we do have a room available. So if that's necessary, which we'll see, it may be. I will go ahead and switch places with Vice Chair Burkle, and we'll get rolling.
All right, Chair Heintzman, would you like to move your bill, House File 1382?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would go ahead and move 1382 to be recommended to be placed on the general register.
All right, Chair Heintzman, go ahead with your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I am working to try to move some legislation. It's more of housekeeping, and I would almost immediately here turn it over to Catherine Neuschler, so she can kind of go through the objective. There's some old language that are old issues that need to be addressed in the bill.
Yeah. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Chair Heintzman. I'm Catherine Neuschler. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Environmental Quality Board, and as Representative Heintzman said, this bill's a cleanup bill for some obsolete language that is in the statutes. One of them refers to a lead report from 1992. The other section that's probably more of interest is repealing one of three sections of statutes related to silica sand that was put in 116C. And it's the part of the statute that says, until rules are made, here are the silica sand projects that are required to go through environmental review. We've made the rules are in place in 4410, and just, you know, we prefer to have everything kind of in one place so people know they can look at the rules, they can see the requirements there, and that they don't have to worry about what's in statute. And that's the summary, Mr. Chair.
All right, thank you. With that, is there any questions from the committee?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Chair Heintzman. You know, normally housekeeping like this would be routine. However, we're not in a routine time, just looking at the federal government, where rules can be just decided to be not enforced. And so my question, and maybe this is a nonpartisan staff response, but so let's say in some future administration, the decision was made to drop the rules and we don't have the statute there as the backup or some form of the statute. We have the enabling statute for the rule until the rule is established. But let's say a future administration says they will not enforce that rule. What protection is there for those requirements if that happened in a future administration? And maybe that's nonpartisan staff.
Chair Heisman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Hansen. I would first defer to Ms. Nischler and see if you would have anything.
Sure, Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, you know, to change the rules, to take them out of the rules now that they are in the rules, we would have to go through a full rulemaking process. I know that doesn't quite get to your question, but it would require a full rulemaking process to remove it at this point.
Thank you. Representative Hansen.
And Mr. Chair and Chair Heinzman, and that'd be under normal circumstances, but we're seeing abnormal circumstances at the federal government. So I just have concerns when we seem to be on uncertain times when we've passed, you know, as a legislature things to repeal stuff that may provide protection. I understand you're moving it to the general register. I think there could be a way of maybe keeping something, but we have thought that we had protections at the federal government, and no longer do we on many things.
Any further questions on the committee? All right. Chair Heisman, would you like to renew your motion?
I would. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would renew my motion that House File 1382 be recommended to be placed on the general register.
All right. Thank you, Chair Heisman. We'll go to a vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carries. Moving on to the next bill. Chair Heisman, would you like to move 1362?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move that House File 1362 be recommended to be placed on the general register.
All right. Thank you, Chair Heisman. To your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, another housekeeping bill of sorts. So I would turn it over again to Ms. Nischler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So this bill supports efficiency by eliminating a legislative report requirement. Under the requirement, the EQB, the MPCA, the DNR, and MnDOT, so those three are state agencies that serve as responsible governmental units for the state's environmental review program, are required every 3 years to provide a list of the mandatory environmental assessment worksheet and the mandatory environmental impact statement categories, and then to provide information on the intended historical purposes, whether projects within that category are also subject to various permits, and analysis and recommendations for whether the mandatory category should be modified, eliminated, or not changed based on those outcomes and the permits. And so the agencies produced this report in 2013, 2018, 2021, and 2024. Well, we're asking for a repeal of this requirement because the report provides repetitive information. The historical purpose of the categories and the permitting requirements simply don't change when we look at this report each time. And in addition, the analysis is limited to only a small part of the entire environmental review program and only a specific set of potential outcomes for that part of the program, so modified, eliminated, kept. In 2023, the board adopted a continuous improvement process that we believe better serves the state's needs in continually evaluating all parts of the environmental review program, not just the mandatory categories that set forth what project types must go through review, but also the overall process and other procedures. So that process, continuous improvement process, includes responsible governmental unit, partner, and stakeholder engagement, and includes an evaluation process based on the program's key objectives as laid out in the rules, which is providing usable information, supporting public engagement, keeping the responsibility with the governmental unit most closely involved in the project, reducing delay and uncertainty, and eliminating duplication. So the first run-through of this process that we did in 2023 has produced a lot of ideas for programmatic improvements, which we're compiling into potential projects to move forward to evaluate each of the pieces of our program. So in short, this mandatory category report takes a lot of staff time to assemble. It often produces repetitive information. Oftentimes, the time between reports is insufficient to actually implement any recommendations that might be made. And we've developed better processes to evaluate the environmental review program and whether it's meeting its objectives. So we think the time has come to repeal this report requirement.
All right. Thank you for that explanation. Do we have any questions from the committee for either the author or anything? All right. Back to you, Chair Hansman. Do you want to renew your motion?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't have any additional comments, so I will go ahead and renew my motion that House File 1662 be recommended to be placed on the General Register.
1362, correct?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. 1362.
All right. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. All right.
Thank you.
On to our next bill. Chair Hansman has House File 81 up next, off-highway vehicles. Chair Hansman, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the motion is that House File 81 be recommended to be placed on the General Register.
Thank you, Chairman Hansman. Would you like to explain your bill?
Sure, I will do that. Members, since the passage of Minnesota's PFAS ban, which was pretty expansive in 2023, the impact has been, I think, more than what a lot of folks might have anticipated, certainly those that are attempting to purchase some products and in some cases, fixed products, access services, and what my bill seeks to address is what it, I think it is a prime example of that. House File 81 would exempt off-highway vehicles, otherwise known as OHVs, so that'd be snowmobiles, e-bikes, from the definition of a juvenile product. There's more there, but generally that's what we're focusing on. My hope is that the bill could positively impact other similarly affected families as my own, and e-bikes might be a pretty good example of one of the challenges that folks are having, thinking, you know, this is something that continue to be available, and there's some real challenges there. So that is, in a nutshell, what the bill is doing, but I know there's going to be a lot of questions here today. I have testifiers, I'm sure, that are going to be wanting to weigh in first on the bill as well, Mr. Chair.
All right. Thank you, Chair Hansman, for that explanation. I think we'll go right to testifiers, remembering, as we discussed at the start, we've got 2 minutes per testifier. So first up is Chris Conroy from ATV Association of Minnesota. Oh, yeah. We'll do on deck is Karen Umphress, Amateur Riders Motorcycle Association. Be ready. All right, Mr. Conroy, to your testimony. Right. Announce thank yourself. You. Yeah, thank you. Identify yourself for the committee and proceed.
All right. My name is Chris Conroy. I am with ATV Minnesota. I am the chairperson of the Safety Committee. I'm a certified Minnesota DNR Youth ATV Safety Instructor and also a Trail Ambassador. As an outdoor user group, we'd like to thank those working to reduce forever chemicals. However, we also realize there's well-intentioned legislation that can sometimes lead to unintentional consequences. The passage of the PFAS Forever Chemicals Law has resulted in the ban of youth ATVs in Minnesota. The Unintended consequences is safety. That's the reason I'm here today. Youth ATVs, which are low-powered, lightweight machines, are excellent tools to teaching riders under 12 to ride responsibly. Proper supervision, safety gear, getting an ATV safety certificate, and riding an appropriately sized machine using Minnesota DNR fit requirements are crucial for ATV safety. In 2022, the American Academy of Pediatrics noted 90% of children under 16 involved in ATV crashes were riding adult ATVs. Banning youth ATVs will push novices and first-time users onto high-powered, heavy adult ATVs, creating an unsafe situation. And assuming all kids wait until they're 16 to ride an appropriate adult-sized machine is incorrect. As a youth ATV safety instructor, I can tell you, as I speak to kids in the classes that I teach, I can tell you most of those kids have ridden adult-sized machines already. We need to give kids the opportunity to learn how to ride and operate ATVs and learn how to navigate terrain on an appropriately sized machine. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Conroy. Next up, Karen Umfress. Identify yourself for the committee and proceed.
Hi, I'm Karen Umfress. Thanks for having me here. I am with the Amateur Riders Motorcyclists Association. We're also District 23 of the National American Motorcyclist Association. I am also testifying for Bill 81. Again, I am a dirt bike school coach. I've been one for 15 years, and we are also very concerned about the safety. We do not feel that PFAs are good for the environment. We do not feel that this should be a permanent exemption, but we need the time to allow the manufacturers to find out ways in which they can update their machines so that they are environmentally correct without PFAs. But PFAs are also in many things that we weren't expecting, like gas tanks. So right now, if we don't have the PFAs in the plastic gas tanks, it will actually leak gas, which is not good. So we need that time. We're also very concerned about the safety, as Chris said, about putting kids on youth-sized machines instead of adult-sized machines. It's very detrimental to the kids for their safety to have them be on adult-sized machines. We also saw a ban in 2008 on youth-sized machines, and three things happened. Or one of two things happened. Either the kids were not recreating with their family, experiencing the outdoors, or they were put on adult-sized machines. In this case, we also have the risk that we're sending all of our people over to Wisconsin or Iowa or to other places to buy the youth-sized machines and bring them into Minnesota, which won't help the PFA's situation in Minnesota either. So we very much appreciate your time, and we hope that 81 passes. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next up, we have Christian Francis from MinUSA. Identify yourself for the committee and proceed with your testimony.
Chair, members of the committee, my name is Christian Francis, and I'm testifying on behalf of the Minnesota United Snowmobilers Association, or more commonly referred to as MinUSA. In Minnesota, we have near 22,000 miles of groomed trails and clubs across the state to facilitate this great sport. Despite our lack of snow, we still have youth clubs meeting. That said, youth safety and participation are two of our organization's top priorities. Consistent with the MPCA report, I spoke with one manufacturer who confirmed that the PFAS-containing components of these machines are internally contained and not readily accessible by the average rider, particularly those of young age. For these reasons and others, we support the passage of House File 81. I'd like to thank the chair as well as the committee, and particularly the author of the bill, for focusing on these fun outdoor activities across the state. Thank you. Any questions?
All right. Thank you for your testimony. Next up, we have Ivana Stark, and then Kirk Kadelko will be up after that. Please identify yourself with the committee and proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Ivana Stark, State Director of Clean Water Action Minnesota. Our mission is to ensure that all water is fishable, swimmable, and drinkable for generations to come. Thank you for your time today. First, I want to say that Amara's Law doesn't ban ETVs, but it does ban the use of PFAS in them. That's an important distinction to make. A few months ago, I was interviewed by Fox 9 about PFAS and ETVs because the general manager of a small motorsports business had reached out to them. After the interview, I emailed this gentleman, and we both met with a senator to talk about the situation. He shared two emails with me, one from Honda dated December 20th, 2024, and the other from Yamaha dated January 3, 2025, just 2 days after the law took effect. These emails acknowledged the new PFAS regulations, but then by then it was too late for the retailers to adjust their inventory. These manufacturers were aware of Amara's Law by mid-2023, yet they allowed businesses to purchase inventory they knew that they would not be legal to sell. This tactic unfairly placed the burden on small businesses, using them as leverage to argue that implementation is too difficult and too costly. Minnesota businesses should not be blindsided. This is a failure. This is not a failure of the law, but of industry's refusal to prepare. To give a blanket exemption because multi-million-dollar industries couldn't do their job and notify retailers is ridiculous. Trade associations, the chamber, and manufacturers knew this was happening and did nothing to prepare or swap out the PFAS components. The party at fault here isn't the law. It is the time. It isn't the time or the team it took to put it together. The party at fault is corporations and their insatiable greed. This isn't about ATVs. This is about gutting the most comprehensive ban on toxic PFAS in the country. And the chemical industry knows this. States across the country are following Minnesota's lead to protect the water from PFAS. And again, this isn't about ATVs. This is just a way to get the law and bust it wide open and strip it for parts. We can do better than this, and we must be better than this. And so I ask that you reject House File 81 to protect Minnesotans. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Kirk Kadelkin, please identify yourself.
Mr. Chair, while we're moving up, could the testifier mic be pulled closer to that one in particular? It's a little bit hard
sure.
to hear.
Yeah, please speak into the microphone. All right, identify yourself for committee and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair and committee members. For the record, my name is Kirk Kadelkin. I'm Assistant Commissioner with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. Just want to talk a little bit about the bill, the statute itself. While some view these prohibitions through the lens of protecting folks from direct touch or exposures to these harmful chemicals, our concerns cover additional exposure pathways, and it's important to keep this in mind as we look at this and other legislation that will be before us. One, there is the production phase of the products. They create and release PFAS into the environment, creating exposures to neighbors and workers and the larger natural resources. There's the exposure from the direct touch that most folks are talking about in their letters, but there's also the disposal at the end of life. The disposal of these products introduce these chemicals to our wastewater facilities and our landfills where they pose significant challenges. And I think it's important to keep this concept in mind as we talk about this in the next bill. In implementing Amara's Law, the MPCA has engaged over 1,000 manufacturers, retailers, industrial groups since the passage in May 2023. We're committed to continue having these conversations with businesses and others on how do we protect folks from PFAS. In our recent report that we testified here, we recommended an extension until 2032 for the use of intentionally added PFAS on electronic and internal components. This exemption allows folks time to develop safer alternatives in these areas. Specifically to the outdoor recreational vehicle area, we've heard from one manufacturer that our recommendations would address the issue for these products. In addition, we've reached out to others to determine if it would also address the issue. To date, we have not heard that this would cause any problems, the agency's recommendation. The problem is this bill goes beyond just the extension of electronic and internal components, allowing PFAS uses in other areas of the devices. In addition, it would allow manufacturers to introduce PFAS to new items moving forward, thus going in the wrong direction instead of going away from reducing PFAS usage. It is why we oppose the bill and recommend implementation of the MPCA's proposed changes for electronic and other internal components instead. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you for your testimony. Next up, Lori Olinger. Please identify yourself for the committee and proceed.
Hi, my name is Lori Olinger, and I'm here on behalf of Sierra Club North Star Chapter. And I'm speaking in opposition to HF 81, which would carve out exemptions for snowmobiles, e-bikes, and off-highway vehicles used by kids. Some in the industry claim that fluoropolymers are safer than PFAS and are essential in motorized vehicles. However, a variety of other PFAS are emitted during the production, processing, use, and end-of-life treatment of fluoropolymers. There are serious concerns regarding the toxicity and adverse effects of fluorinated processing aids on humans and the environment, including certain types of cancer, immunotoxicity, reproductive, developmental, and liver toxicity, and thyroid disease. There are concerns regarding the safe disposal of fluoropolymers also, which are extremely persistent in the environment. Landfilling of fluoropolymers leads to contamination of leachates with PFAS and the effectiveness of incineration to destroy PFAS and the tendency for formation of fluorinated or other byproducts is not well understood. Given fluoropolymers' extreme persistence, emissions associated with their production, use, and disposal, and high likelihood for human exposure to PFAS, their production and uses should be curtailed, except in cases of essential use, and Amara's law provides for that. So I ask you to vote against HF 81 and not weaken Amara's law.
All right. Thank you for your testimony. And finally on my list, I have Kyle Makarios. Please identify yourself for the committee and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. My name is Kyle Makarios, and I'm here on behalf of the Motorcycle Industry Council, the Specialty Vehicle Institute of America, and the Recreational Off-Highway Vehicle Association. We represent hundreds of manufacturers, dealers, and distributors of motorcycles, ATVs, and ROVs, which are frequently referred to as side-by-sides. We strongly support House File 81 to exclude youth off-highway vehicles from Minnesota's PFAS law. Lower-risk polymerized PFAS are currently unavoidable uses in power sports in order to withstand extreme heat and chemical blends, to provide water resistance, corrosion resistance, and friction properties, for electrical insulation to provide flexibility and durability, in fuel hoses, which must withstand a myriad of fuel blends while maintaining flexibility and structural integrity to prevent cracking or catastrophic leaks, and for gaskets, which must stand up to high heat to prevent fluids and fuel vapors from exiting the vehicle, causing clean air violations, environmental contamination, and risk of vehicle fires. Youth OHVs are properly sized and powered specifically for youth. By banning them, you could force children to use adult-sized and powered vehicles, putting children at risk. Several years ago, the U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission was looking to ban lead in youth products, but they ultimately excluded youth OHVs from the ban because they recognized the risk of putting children on adult-sized vehicles. Minnesota law already excludes youth products such as phones, computers, gaming consoles, and other items that children are in constant contact with. Unlike those excluded items, children are not coming into regular physical contact with our vehicle's gaskets, hoses, wiring insulation, or chrome plating. We've seen news reports across Minnesota of the economic harm already inflicted upon power sports dealers who have youth products at their dealerships that they are now unable to sell due to this overly broad law. We hope that this committee takes action to correct that today. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Thank you for your testimony. Is there any further testimony in testifiers in the audience? If not, we'll proceed to member questions. Do we have any questions? Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have some questions for the MPCA. Maybe Assistant Commissioner Kadelka could come back.
Go ahead, Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Chair Burkle. To Assistant Commissioner Kadelka, in your testimony, you mentioned how this would open the door for additional products to House File 81 as it's currently before us. Could allow for additional uses of PFAS. Could you say a little bit more about that and what those would be?
Commissioner Kadelka.
Sure. Chair and committee members, for the record again, my name is Kirk Kadelka with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. Because it exempts the entire class, it would still allow for PFAS in those other external areas. For instance, we have heard folks talk about it being potentially used in reflective material or that. If it is already not being used there, this would allow for it to be reintroduced in that area moving forward, or new uses of PFAS between now and 2032. So that's where our concern lies, is that there are still those potential issues here where those external pieces, which folks have said are the most concern to them, those would be exempted.
Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Chair Burkle, and thank you, Assistant Commissioner. I guess I have another question then as well. I know you also oversee landfill policy for MPCA.
What happens when somebody throws out a product that has PFAS into it and it's either and it goes into a landfill, for example? What is that process like? How do products have an effect when they're in the landfill? Do they not? How does it work to have a product with PFAS in it in one of our Minnesota landfills?
Commissioner Kvelka.
Thank you, Chair and committee members. When those things are disposed in landfills, they break down. And that includes then PFAS, which can be released into the leachate, which then is sent to the wastewater treatment plants. So both our public and private landfills now have to deal with this cost, the same with our wastewater treatment plants that are there. What we're seeing in leachate, even studies are showing up to 10,000 parts per trillion in the leachate. So there's a lot of PFAS in there that are now being pushed off to our many times publicly owned landfills and taxpayers or wastewater plants to cover the costs.
Representative Jordan.
Yep, and I'll wrap up. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Assistant Commissioner Kadelka. It's a mouthful. I think this is not a good bill. I will be voting no on it. I think, you know, this isn't something that just impacts people who buy an ATV or buy a new bike or something. This impacts all of us. We all drink water. We're all downstream from somewhere. This is something that's going to increase PFAS when we work so hard to make sure that we would shut off that tap. We know we have a problem with PFAS. I'm not on the bonding committee, but I know some people are, and I don't know how many millions and billions of dollars bonding committee members have had to hear from communities that want to deal with their PFAS, but turning on this tap again is not a good idea for Minnesota, and it doesn't make financial sense for us as a legislature, so I'll be voting no. Thanks.
Any other questions for members? Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Chair Burkle. I'm not sure if this is a question for the MPCA or for Mr. Makarios, but I'm wondering about alternatives to PFAS. We had a presentation by the MPCA talking about pens and some other products, and so I'm just wondering what else is out there, and I'm not sure who can best answer that question.
Would Mr. Makarios or Assistant Commissioner Kadelka, either one, or maybe both.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Please identify yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Purcell, we do not believe that there are currently alternatives, PFAS-free alternatives for things like fuel gaskets, fuel hoses, gaskets, and engines. That is why, for most, the vast majority of the uses that the ban on this is pushed out till 2032, right? But the one exception is for youth vehicles. So we're trying to craft a narrowly carved expansion to recognize that the fuel gasket in a youth ATV is no different than the fuel gasket in an adult ATV, and we think should be treated similarly.
Okay. Assistant Commissioner Kadelka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, again, for the record, Kirk Kadelka, Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. There are some items, as mentioned, some gaskets and electronics and that we don't see alternatives yet ready, but they're in the near future. And so that's why the report that the MPCA put together is about internal and electronic components and really focusing on those that are the issue and not a blanket exemption for the whole product category of outdoor vehicles.
Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Chair Burkle. I'm sorry, can you repeat that just that last part? I'm not sure I totally understood that.
Assistant Commissioner.
Mr. Chair and committee members, it's because of those internal components we really want to focus any additional time extensions on those components versus the whole vehicle, because really just focusing on the electronics, the gaskets, and that where we don't have an alternative today but will in the future.
Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Chair Burkle. I guess one follow-up then. What's kind of the timeline and what's the pipeline looking at this? I mean, I think you're hearing a lot of concerns from people and in the letters and from members over here of thinking that, you know, this sounds like, oh, we're poking a little hole right now that could turn into a, you know, complete tear. So I guess I'm looking for some assurances of, like, how far away are those innovations, if you have insight into that. Thank you,
Chair.
Mr. Chair.
Looks like you have an answer for that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Purcell. I don't think that we're able to tell you conclusively what time a product is going to be available. And I would argue that that's part of the reason that the bill is here today. We hope that it's available sooner than later, but the manufacturers can develop products, and then in addition, there's going to be the testing phase. How long can this product hold fuel safely, or will it potentially not be able to perform to the level that keeps our kids safe if they happen to be using a product used with an alternative? There's a lot of questions there, and you could argue that is somewhat of a symptom of passing legislation that may not have the technology behind it to support the desired outcomes. And this bill is attempting to bridge that gap. Rather than put kids further at risk, who would, as we've heard in testimony, potentially be jumping on an adult model ATV as opposed to one that's made for them, well, then we're having an entirely different conversation. And I think that we're all struggling with the potential impacts and the health risk of PFAS in products, while at the same time the safety risk that arguably could be greater than the health impact to these parts being used in youth model ATVs and snowmobiles and such. So to answer your question, there is no perfect answer. Nobody can tell you the date specific where that technology will suddenly be available.
Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Chair Burkle. I guess just a couple of follow-ups. I think it's tough to equate, you know, a family and, you know, someone who gets hurt on an ATV versus the, as Commissioner Kudelka said, additional exposure pathways, both in the making of the PFAS, the involvement, you know, of the product itself, and then that lifetime of, I mean, it's not called forever chemicals for nothing. And I guess the other alternative narrative that I will just say in response is that I think also we see this sort of legislation like we passed in Amara's law. We know that there's a problem. And just because there isn't a perfect fix doesn't mean that we shouldn't take steps. So I would just argue that perhaps having legislation that's a little more aspirational can also hopefully spur innovation and create incentive for these companies to get on board to achieve what we want, which is no more PFAS. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. Thank you. Representative Fisher. Okay.
Just want to check real quick. Are there any more questions?
Okay. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, on this line of questioning in terms of exposure and thinking about liquid fuel and the need for having PFAS equipment in the lines, in all of the devices relating to that liquid fuel, you know, one of the things, it's not a choice, is if you're by the exhaust. And do we know, you know, if these vehicles are shedding PFAS through those internal combustion engines, that's not a choice if you're near that. That's a different type of exposure, particularly with kids. So, you know, I understand what you're saying, Representative Heinzman, but precautionary principle that if we are concerned about some levels of exposure, you know, we may have exposure that comes in through inhalation from the emissions that are related to that fuel going through those lines. I'm assuming the PFAS is in the lines to retain the integrity of the lines or the equipment, but then it probably is also being shed because of the fuel. Any answer on that?
Representative Heitzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Hansen, I would just say I think that it is important. I don't think that safety is disconnected from what was passed in 2023 versus what were. I think these two things are connected in House File 81 in that if you have a alternative fuel line being used in a youth model ATV in an attempt to comply with current language and it's not performing to the same level, I think we all understand that can cause a fire. I have several of these youth model ATVs and dirt bikes, and when it comes to those kinds of internal components, I'm going to buy the highest quality product available to replace those lines, because if I screw that up And you mentioned an exhaust system. There's heat there. There's the potential for ignition if there's unused fuel. The last thing we want is a kid being burned or harmed due to fuel that potentially could be leaking as a result of the PFAS ban in juvenile products. I would think that in a bipartisan way, we could all look at that together and agree that's bad and that it is connected to the safety concern that we all share for our kids. And what we're asking for is that if this bill were to become law, the time is available, the opportunity is there for those products to catch up with legislation that was passed. And if that product can be found to be a successful alternative, great. But in the meantime, we don't have one, and we don't have, as we were discussing earlier, as responding to questions, we don't have a date for the timeline that would be certain to know, okay, now we have XYZ component available for use in these products. We're just not there yet.
Representative Hansen. You're done. Any other questions? Otherwise, Representative Fisher, if you'd like to.
Thank you, Chair Burkle. This would be for the MPCA Assistant Commissioner Kadelka. I was a little concerned when you were responding to the questions earlier from Representative Jordan that the way this is written right now, it could allow for additional uses of PFAS in these products that are currently not used. Is that correct?
Assistant Commissioner.
Mr. Chair and committee members, correct.
That also raises concerns for me. Is it possible that the way between this bill and other bills that are written, there are end dates right now for the use of PFAS in a number of products? Does that still exist, or do these exemptions start opening that up where there may not be an end date on some of these products?
Assistant Commissioner.
Mr. Chair and committee members, we believe the report addresses some of those issues that you've talked about, the report recommendations, where it would still then kick them into the 2032 category. However, in the meantime, though, there are those additional uses that continue or new uses of PFAS this through the way the bill is written. That's why we support and can believe we can address the other issues through the report recommendations.
Representative Fisher.
So am I correct? You're saying that that there will be no product exempted after 2032?
Assistant Commissioner. Go ahead.
Chair, yeah. These products would then kick up to the 2032 prohibition, and they would have to follow that deadline under the way it's written.
So it's extending out the current one. Okay, thank you. I just want to make sure I had that understanding. Thank you. At this point in time, I'd like to move to table it and roll call.
Okay, the motion to table is a non-debatable motion. With that, take the roll.
Chair Hinesman?
No.
Vice Chair Burkle?
No.
Lee Fisher?
Yes.
Representative Falconer?
Yes.
Representative Finke, excused. Representative Gilman?
No.
Representative Hansen?
Yes.
Representative Jacob?
No.
Representative Jordan?
Aye.
Representative Nelson?
No.
Representative Purcell?
Purcell, aye.
Representative Schultz?
No.
Representative Warwas?
All right. We have five yeses and seven noes. The motion does not prevail.
And roll call for the final vote.
A roll call request for the final vote. First off, Chair Hinesman, would you like to wrap up your bill and renew your motion?
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I continue to want to work with members on these bills as they make their way to the House floor, so please reach out to me if there's something that you believe we could potentially address, and I thank members for the discussion this afternoon.
All right, Chair Hinesman, would you like to renew your motion?
I would. I would continue to move that House File 81 be recommended to be placed on the General Register.
All right, thank you, Chair Hinesman. And roll call requested. Please take the roll.
Chair Heinzman?
Yes.
Vice Chair Burkle?
Yes.
Lead Fisher?
Fisher, no.
Representative Falconer?
No.
Representative Finke, excused. Representative Gilman?
Yes.
Representative Hansen?
No.
Representative Jacob?
Yes.
Representative Jordan?
No.
Representative Nelson?
Yes.
Representative Purcell?
Purcell, nay.
Representative Schultz?
Schultz, aye.
Representative Warwas?
All right, we have seven ayes and five nays. The motion prevails. All right, moving on, Chair Ensman, would you like to move House File 1627?
Yes, I would, Mr. Chair. I would move House File 1627 be recommended to be referred to the committee to the Commerce and Policy Finance Committee.
Thank you. Chair Heinzman has moved his House File 1627 to move to Commerce, Finance, and Policy. Chair Heinzman, to your bill.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 1627 makes two changes to Minnesota's PFAS law. The first change is to exclude items manufactured for commercial or industrial use. There are thousands of components in products. We were just talking a few moments ago in the previous bill about internal components. That extends to this category as well. These things are sold in Minnesota, and we have the task of trying to figure out if they contain PFAS, and it's creating confusion amongst manufacturers. The second change moves the date on when manufacturers have to report products that contain intentionally added PFAS to the MPCA from 2026 out to 2028. We're about 10 months away from the deadline, and I have been told there's no rule, that no rule has been published or guidance on how manufacturers are to comply with this law. It's critical that the agency get this right, so we don't have companies that are in uncompliance or noncompliance with the law. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair Heitzman. I see you have an amendment. Would you like to offer your A1 amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move the A1 amendment.
Could you please explain your amendment, Chair Heitzman?
So the A1 is fairly straightforward, but we may have some more questions. It's really, as was referenced previously in the bill heard a moment ago, the recommendations from MPCA's most recent report. If you want to look at it, it's entitled Recommendations for Products Containing Lead, Cadmium, and PFAS.
Thank you, Chair Heinzman. Are there any questions from the committee on the amendment? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Amendment carries. All right. We'll move on to testifiers. Up first, I have Patrick Hines, Alliance for Automotive Innovation. After that, Jeff Munter, if you could be ready. Reminding everyone to try and keep things to 2 minutes. If you could identify yourself for the committee and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Patrick Hines with Messerly Kramer. I'm here on behalf of the Alliance for Automotive Innovation, which represents America's auto industry. We feel that House File 1627 would make the requirements of Minnesota's PFAS law more workable for both industry and the PCA by delaying PFAS reporting requirements for 2 years and by excluding scope of business-to-business transactions from the law. I just want to talk a little about PFAS in the auto industry. The expectations for automobiles, both internal combustion and electric, are high. The environments in which these vehicles must operate are very harsh, from Minnesota winters to Arizona summers, and consumers expect their cars and trucks to operate safely. The PFAS family of chemicals helps provide resiliency through the application of coatings and products that resist heat, oil, grease, and water. Such qualities are imperative throughout the vehicle. The heat resistance qualities of PFAS allow flexible fuel lines that safely deliver gasoline into a hot engine without causing fire. Heat resistance and protection from water intrusion protects the integrity of sensors, brake lines, and other components of vehicle safety functions. In addition to these safety benefits, modern vehicles have drastically reduced emission, in part because of the chemical and heat-resistant properties of PFAS that provide, provide resiliency to gaskets to keep engines tightly sealed, coatings on cylinder heads and hoses, which reduce fugitive gasoline vapor emissions. In short, nearly every automotive system depends on some type of PFAS chemical to provide reliable, safer operation. Automakers and their suppliers consider the impacts of chemicals used to build today's vehicles very seriously, and we are always looking for substitute compounds that can perform the same job with a lower environmental impact. In recent years, auto manufacturers redesigned air conditioning systems, for example, to utilize refrigerants that lower global warming. We've recognized areas where we can to reduce the use of PFAS in certain applications, and we will continue to do so. In terms of the list, I apologize, I ran a little bit over. I'd just like to point out that there are approximately 30,000 components to a single automobile. Trying to provide a list to the PCA that would identify 30,000 parts would be a monumental task. We think the two-year extension is very reasonable, and I appreciate your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Moving on, Jeff Munter, please identify yourself for the committee and proceed.
Chair and members of the committee, my name is Jeff Munter, and I've been a trusted friend of Amara and Nora Strandy for many years. Most of you have heard their story by now and heard how critical they've been in passing the legislation discussed before you today, known as Amara's Law. Now that Amara can no longer stand before you to tell her story, the opportunists saw their opening to move us back right where we started. Using the tactic of getting small business owners in a bind so they would blame the solution instead of the problem. There are people lined up to speak today who are ready to spread the lie that what isn't safe is what makes us better off. So I'd like to use my time today to pose a quick thought experiment. Without the exact metrics or margin of error, I want you to imagine how much money is made using these chemicals and saved by continued use rather than alternatives. Don't worry about the exact number, but I imagine what you picture is fairly high. Now, with that number in mind, imagine someone you love beyond words being diagnosed with an illness for which there is no cure. Imagine your child, your spouse, your parent, sibling, cousin, trusted coworker, or valued neighbor with an entirely preventable and painful sickness for which there is no treatment, no roadmaps, and no solutions. If you knew that forever chemicals were likely the cause, I ask you, is that number you imagined big enough? For me, you could multiply that number by the speed of light and then triple it, and it wouldn't even come close to what I would trade for one more day with Amara. I don't want revenge against people whose names I will never know, and I don't want companies to go under for the sins of the past. Friends, I want Amara's story to remain the turning point we needed to ensure this does not have to continue to be our reality. Amara pushed us this far until her last breath, but the work is not done. I ask each of you for the courage to do what's right and protect the foundations of Amara's Law from those who would create the cracks to tear it down. Thank you for your time. I strongly encourage you to vote no today.
Thank you for your testimony. Next up, we have Christian Krohn. Please identify yourself for the committee and proceed.
Good afternoon, Chair and committee members. My name is Christian Krohn. I'm a resident of Oakdale, Minnesota, and a graduate of Tartan High School. At Tartan, we shared jokes about drinking the cancer water. We were teenagers and young adults openly joking about our water, one of life's basic needs, being poisoned and a danger to the public. Yet we still drank from the water fountains, used the showers for sports, washed our hands in the bathrooms, and acted like it was just that, a joke. In what world should anyone, especially teenagers, be joking about the safety of water? Forever chemicals are a poison that has been seeped its way into our lakes, our streams, our fish, our soil, our food, and our bodies thanks to industry dumping. For decades, we have been unknowingly exposed to and ingested forever chemicals. There are still people that don't know the severity of this contamination, and they will continue to be unaware unless we fight for a clean future and environment. This bill seeks to exempt manufacturers and industry from the law. The same manufacturers and industry that dumped in our community and made us sick. Why do they get a free pass to do that? Amara's Law was created with just this in mind. By keeping forever chemicals out of our products, we work towards keeping them out of our environment. It's as simple as that. The law is meant to make products safer for consumers, not to keep said products out of our state. If big business can't find a solution to make their products without forever chemicals, show us the proof. Show us that you've tried every possible option and there's just no way to make said products without forever chemicals. Why should consumers bear the poisonous burden of these chemicals when big businesses haven't tried to find a solution? If we give exemptions today, how can we know industry will work on alternatives tomorrow? In 2020, the U.S. Federal Emergency Management Agency estimated, statistically, that the value of a human life was about $7.5 million. This is a value used in estimating the cost comparison and safety measures and improvements for businesses. If we look at the population of Minnesota in July of 2024, according to the U.S. Census Bureau, this is an issue that affects an estimated 5,793,151 people. Using that monetary value of every person in Minnesota as a statistical estimate, we see this is a 434 quintillion, 486 quadrillion, 330 trillion value of every person in Minnesota. When does the cost outweigh the poison? How many lives are worth an exemption? Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next up, we have Natalie Waters. Please identify yourself for the committee and proceed.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, and hello to those watching online. My name is Natalie Waters, and I am here to ask the committee to please vote no on House File 1627. Is it typical for a 24-year-old to ponder things like, will all of my friends die before me? I started asking that question shortly after my friend Amara died. She believed her deadly cancer was caused by PFAS, and she lived on the plume. So do many of my close friends. I didn't think twice about that morbid question until I said it out loud and someone gasped. I guess it isn't normal for a 24-year-old to ask that question. I trust you've heard plenty about the pain that PFAS caused from the Strandy family, so instead I'm here to discuss the financial implications of this bill. Evidence is clear. Our beautiful land of 10,000 lakes has been contaminated. This bill would allow the contamination to be worse than it already is. It is completely unnecessary to accommodate big business. Multi-million dollar companies have plenty of resources to find the solutions they need without Amara's Law being changed. I can't wrap my head around why we should exempt industry when the state is already running low on money to clean up the mess that industry created. In a document from the May 2024 workgroup meeting on the 3M settlement, slide 16 says, quote, the remaining settlement funding will likely be committed within approximately 2 years. End quote. The state does not have the funds to clean up the poison already here. I don't care why the poison is being brought in. Poison is poison is poison is poison. And Minnesota taxpayers like me do not want poison in our state. And we certainly do not want to be uninformed about what is poisoning us for two more years. I am angry, and I refuse to downplay my anger. I should be angry about this, because HF 1627 will cost Minnesotans more money and more heartbreak. I ask the committee to please do your job and protect the people you represent. Minnesotans are watching. I know at this point I will have run out of time, and for that I am sorry, but I will not be silenced. And to anyone who wishes to silence me, I say this, try me. Thank you.
Next up, we have Heidi Adelsman. Please identify yourself for the committee and proceed.
Hi, my name is Heidi Adelsman. I'm here today as a member of the Alliance of Nurses for a Healthy Environment and as a nurse who's worked with children who have cancer. Note, Tartan High School in Oakdale in Washington County is one of the largest in the nation that donates to the American Cancer Society's Relay for Life. This is because of the high number of families and children who have cancer there. They are a microcosm of what our state will grow to be if PFAS contamination is not contained. As someone who has cared for children suffering from cancer, you do not want to see what it's like for parents who cry helplessly that they would offer their own lives to save their children. Cancer treatment causes more suffering as a child is slowly dying. Many nurses who work in pediatric oncology see immeasurable losses as a child undergoes chemotherapy, loses function of arms and legs, experiences nausea and vomiting, hair loss with radiation, possibly an amputation of a limb, with multiple surgeries, all which have side effects. For nurses, a support or prayer group isn't enough, as many are depressed and overwhelmed at the slow, painful death unfolding and their grief that they share with the parents. This is suffering beyond anything most of us here know, except for those who've lived it. How many here have children attending a high school that has a cancer support group? We might ask why this is necessary for students at Tartan High School. Is this normal? Do we believe this should be normalized in the state of Minnesota? There is a reason Denmark and France have banned PFAS, as it is a threat to public health and a crisis environmentally. And the heavily lobbied Teflon cookware industry can certainly find alternatives, as can the other representatives speaking today on behalf of automotive and ATM and other industries. Families and children who are sick with cancer will unlikely be able to participate in activities like four-wheeling that this bill seeks to exempt and ignore. Please do not accept this legislation that pretends Amara's law is too fast and needs further research. This legislation dishonors and disrespects those suffering with cancer in one family, in one school, in county where there's a high concentration of cancers, often of rare cancers like Amara's. Note that healthcare professionals are horrified seeing and treating a disproportionate number of children from Washington County, even as it is denied. We ask that you value prioritizing the health and life, especially of our innocent children, over the loss of profits and goods. Thank you.
Next up, we have Michael Strandy. Please identify yourself for the committee and proceed. After that, we'll have Nora Strandy, if she could.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Michael Strandy, and I am the father of Amara Strandy. The amount of scientific evidence on the harms of PFAS is now overwhelming. The tiny amount released by a particle, the tiny amount released by a particular product most likely will not harm you. However, PFAS is bioaccumulative. The effects of forever chemicals on our bodies is death by a thousand cuts. Look around this room. Look into the faces of the people who are here, especially the young people. Do you know why they are here? They are here because they are afraid. They are afraid because they know they have been poisoned. Every person in this room has been poisoned. Studies show that we have approximately 5 times the level of PFAS in our blood that is deemed safe. We have a time bomb in each one of us. Your children, your grandchildren, have that same time bomb inside of them. When someone talks to you about making changes to Amara's law, ask them if your children or grandchildren will be safe from these chemicals. Then imagine a 15-year-old girl lying in an intensive care room hooked to 15 different IVs after 10-hour surgery to remove a 15-pound tumor that has meshed itself in her liver. What does the person talking to you about PFAS chemical have at stake? I have another daughter. She has been exposed to the same forever chemicals as Amara. Common sense dictates you do not allow someone to continue poisoning you. You have been poisoned. The ones who poisoned you do not care. The proposal to change the definition of the word product insults our intelligence, and the change will allow companies to not comply with Amara's law. Amara came here 2 years ago. At the time, there were no laws to protect her from the poison in us all. She wanted to ensure there will be a law and laws to protect others in her community. I ask you to vote no for any changes that will put the people of Minnesota at further risk from forever chemicals. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next up, we have Nora Strandy. Please identify yourself for the committee and proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I am Nora Strandy, younger sister of Amara Strandy. At the age of 15, Amara was diagnosed with rare liver cancer. Her first surgeries resulted in a 40-day ICU stay. The initial bill that our family received only covered the room's rent and cost over $900,000. When we add up all hospital stays and surgeries following, my family estimates Amara's cancer has cost about $5 million. And when insurance companies have to pay million-dollar cancer bills, everyone else's insurance rates rise. EWG's tap water database shows that the water Amara and I grew up drinking in Woodbury contains a whopping 264.8 parts per trillion of perfluorobutanic acid, also known as PFBA. The Minnesota Pollution Control Agency estimates that PFAS cleanup in Woodbury will cost taxpayers $400 million. Mouse studies have shown that exposure to PFBA can result in cellular changes and increased weight in the thyroid and liver. It could also lead to delayed development and decreased red blood cells and hemoglobin. Manufactured chemistries are the primary use of many PFAS, including PFBA. Manufacturers use these PFAS to create stain-resistant substances that they sell to other companies. These substances are then applied to consumer products like fabrics or carpets. As another example, though 3M will no longer manufacture PFAS by the end of this year, they will continue to buy PFAS from other companies to create lithium-ion batteries, printed circuit boards, and certain seals and gadgets. At its core, this practice fits the category of, quote, items manufactured for industrial or commercial use, end quote, which will be exempt from Amara's law if House Bill HF 1627 is passed. Exempting industrial and commercial use would let PFAS manufacturers off the hook point blank, resulting in greedy corporations continuing to poison Minnesotans with PFAS for the sake of higher profits. This was, is, and will never be a good idea. Thank you, and I encourage you to vote against any changes to Amara's law.
All right. Thank you for your testimony. Next up, we have Andrew Hossack. Please identify yourself to the committee and proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Andrew Hossack, testifying on behalf of BIFMA, the Business and Industrial Furniture Manufacturers Association. Thank you for the opportunity to comment on House File 1627. I would like to specifically express our support for the A1 amendment, which provides a temporary exemption for internal and electronic components within upholstered furniture. BIFMA and its members are committed to advancing sustainable practices across the industry. We are fully supportive of efforts to reduce and ultimately eliminate PFAS from our products. Since the end of last year, we have successfully removed PFAS from fabric, fabric treatments, and leather used in our industry's products. However, more time is needed to address the use of PFAS in the internal and electronic components of our products. These components are critical to the functionality and safety of various furniture items, and these components are needed to support people in work, healing, and learning. These components are used in lift chairs used by the elderly, massage chairs, desk or chairs with power outlets, standing desks, and recliners. Additionally, many furniture products incorporate mechanisms to improve ergonomics, including tilt, recline, and height adjustment features. We are grateful for the collaborative efforts from MPCA over the past year as they've worked diligently to assess the impact of PFAS in certain product categories. And we also appreciate their thoughtful recommendation in last month's report to allow an exemption for these components until 2032. An exemption until 2032 would provide our industry and suppliers with more time to find, test, and implement viable alternatives to these components where limited solutions currently exist. And we look forward to continued discussions with stakeholders on this issue. Thank you again for the opportunity to testify, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you for your testimony. Next up, we have Laurie Olinger, and then next up to that, Terry Gipps will be up next. Please proceed.
Hello, my name is Laurie Olinger, and I'm here on behalf of the North Star chapter of Sierra Club. In May 2003, 3M said it would voluntarily phase out PFOS because they found it was toxic, bioaccumulating in people, and persistent in the environment. Instead, they tweaked the formula and kept making it. And now we have more than 15,000 PFAS chemicals in production. We in Minnesota know firsthand the damage this family of chemicals has caused. In 2023, we passed the strongest law in the country, Amara's Law. This law was long overdue, and now is not the time to weaken it. PFAS are widely used in commercial and industrial products and processes. Workers at those facilities are at risk, as are repair people. Some of the worst sites for PFAS contamination have been from industrial discharges into water systems. According to the MPCA, PFAS can be bought for between $50 and $1,000 a pound, but to remove and destroy it from municipal wastewater, it costs between $2.7 and $18 million a pound. If the full cost of PFAS was included in the price, companies would swiftly find alternatives. Amara's Law has a process to exempt products that are essential but where there are no alternatives. A blanket exception for commercial and industrial products is not necessary. HF 1627 would also delay reporting requirements by 2 years. And for companies that aren't sure if PFAS is part of their supply chain, this reporting rule is critical for them to uncover this information. There are organizations such as ChemSec that specialize in assisting companies find alternatives to PFAS. Many options are available. PFAS has caused global contamination and is linked to serious health problems. We should not add to the PFAS burden our kids and future generations will have to deal with. I ask you to vote no on 1627. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next up, Terry Gipps. Please identify yourself for the committee.
My name is Terry Gipps from St. Louis Park, and I volunteer as the president of the Alliance for Sustainability, a nonprofit I co-founded 41 years ago with the mission of co-creating sustainability on a personal, organizational, and planetary level. I'm proud of the work we've done with the Minnesota legislature over the past four decades to pass the toughest organic standards in the U.S., ban hazardous pesticides and other toxics, approve landmark groundwater protection legislation, and so much more. We are grateful to you for taking the huge step of passing Amara's Law, the most innovative and far-reaching effort in the world to address the growing scourge we're facing from PFAS forever chemicals. We totally support your important leadership in passing this critical, long-overdue legislation that should be a standard throughout the U.S. We work closely with business to develop win-win-win sustainability solutions that benefit business, people, and the planet. Consequently, we are disappointed by HF 1627 as industry attempts to exempt products for commercial and industrial use from PFAS restrictions, thus weakening Amara's Law, which is essential to protecting people and our planet. Current law allows the commissioner to grant an exemption if no alternative is available, so no change is needed. In most cases, there are excellent alternatives to PFAS chemicals, and we need industry to embrace them or discover them for their own self-benefit and bottom line, as well as the health of their customers and the water we drink. At a time we have to make massive public clean water infrastructure investments in Minnesota, it doesn't make sense to allow even more polluting PFAS forever chemicals into our water systems. I can say that as an economist, we must look at the real costs of our actions, including hidden costs that my fellow economists often call externalities, which is a euphemism because they actually show up in our bodies and environment, which we sadly see with PFAS being everywhere and in all of us. The Alliance has been through this numerous times with pesticides and other chemicals. We've succeeded in banning them, which has provided a net benefit despite the previous cries of industry. The same is true with PFAS forever chemicals. If you look at all those costs, just from the, according to the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, the water cleanup costs would be 18,000 times greater than the product itself. But that doesn't count for a range of other health and other costs that we'd have to pay. So for this reason, we ask that you do not alter Amara's Law for the memory of Amara, Minnesota's important legislative model for the world and for all of us and our children. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up is Ivana Stark. Please identify yourself for the committee. Proceed.
Chair and members of the committee, my name is Ivana Stark, State Director of Clean Water Action. Again, thank you for your time. In 2023, we pulled together stakeholders to ensure the threat of PFAS was understood and that bill was carefully designed. It passed with bipartisan support thanks to the help of Jen DeJornet, who is now the Executive Director of the GOP, and I don't think you get more bipartisan than that. One concession given was adding the phrase intentionally added. In other words, we aren't asking for reporting on anything that isn't intentionally added and put there for a reason. If a manufacturer is producing something and they don't know what's in it, that is deeply concerning. In your packet, you'll find a letter from a manufacturer who makes it clear that he knows everything in his supply chain. And then we went to a funeral. Amara Delore Strandy spent the last months of her life advocating for the passage of this bill. Legislators came to her funeral to mourn with us. Now the sentiment with some seems to be that it is time to undo all the good that was done. We are talking about a toxic, insidious chemical that the industry knew was dangerous starting in the 1950s. They knew it was toxic, and they marketed it, and they sold it to us anyway. Extending this reporting requirement another 2 years means 2 more years of an uninformed consumer base. It's new parents not being able to look into which brands to buy for their newborns. It's 2 years of being unsure how to make safe shopping decisions, and more time to poison our bodies, the land we live on, and the water that we drink. Exempting manufacturers and industrial use renders Amara's law toothless. We have the East Metro plume because of industrial dumping. By exempting manufacturing and industry from complying with Amara's law, you're allowing another generation of children to be poisoned. This bill puts big business and profits before the health and safety of consumers. Pro-PFAS lobbyists are crisscrossing the country with the same misleading information claiming PFAS is safe. We started seeing products with PFAS discounted over a year ago because businesses knew consumers didn't want to buy it. It wasn't selling. It's not profitable. This is just another handout to multi-million and multi-billion dollar corporations that think they're entitled to special treatment over that of Minnesotans. I urge a no vote. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next up, we have Carly Griffith. Please identify yourself for the committee and proceed.
Chair and members of the committee, my name is Carly Griffith. I'm the Water Program Director at the Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy. MCEA is a public interest law firm and nonprofit advocacy organization that has defended Minnesota's environment and the health of its people for the past 50 years. MCEA strongly opposes the proposed exemption of commercial and industrial products from the PFAS restrictions under Amara's law. The legislature carefully wrote Amara's law to target critical product sectors that pose human health risks through the non-essential use of intentionally added PFAS. The law includes reasonable product categories found in PFAS bans in other states, such as Colorado, Connecticut, Maine, and Vermont. HF 1627 seems to be based on the premise that residential products are the only product sector that pose human health risks through direct PFAS exposure. But this is false. PFAS used in commercial and industrial components directly impact drinking water supplies, as well as fish sourced for human consumption. Companies that use PFAS in their commercial and industrial processes discharge PFAS-tainted wastewater directly into Minnesota's surface waters or to a municipal wastewater treatment plant where it can be prohibitively expensive to remove. As of today, only one industrial facility in the state of Minnesota, 3M, is proposed to have discharge limits for a handful of PFAS. Other industrial facilities in the state are able, can currently discharge PFAS without permit limits in their wastewater. This makes source reduction even more critical. Once PFAS wastewater from commercial and industrial sources gets into our rivers, streams, and lakes used for drinking water, it becomes the responsibility of water utilities and their ratepayers to pay millions of dollars for treatment infrastructure to ensure the water is safe to drink. There is replete evidence of this cost burden across the state, from cities like Hastings, Woodbury, and Sauk Rapids as they stare down up to $70 million to remove PFAS before it reaches residents' taps. So I urge the committee not to approve House File 1627, and thanks for your attention.
Thank you. Next up, we have Andrew Marley. Please identify yourself for the committee and proceed.
Thank you, Chairman Heitzman and members of the committee. My name is Andrew Morley, and I'm with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. Our membership entails more than 6,000 businesses across the state. The Chamber supports HF 1627 as amended, legislation that provides manufacturers and retailers clarity and time by exempting products that contain PFAS in commercial or industrial use and extending reporting requirements until 2028. Mandates on businesses mean increased costs and potential scarcity for consumers, and last session passed several mandates with significant unintended consequences. PFAS is a product class consisting of thousands of chemicals with a wide range of properties and characteristics impacting everything from medical devices to snowmobiles. While businesses are voluntarily innovating with alternatives to PFAS throughout supply chains, it remains difficult to supplant every conceivable use. and PFAS present in internal products used commercially or industrially pose less risk to direct human exposure per the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. Further, the A1 amendment to HF 1627 incorporates changes needed to let commerce catch up to the mandates passed last biennium and are recommended by the Walz administration. In January of 2025, the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency reported the need for a more deliberate approach regarding PFAS, lead, and cadmium. The chamber agrees with the MPCA's report, which includes exempting until 2032 the use of intentionally added PFAS in electronic or other internal components, providing a 3-year extension for the use of lead solders for making key fobs and the internal electronic components of other items, and extending the use of certain firefighting foams. These changes, along with others in the amendment and requested by the Walz administration, are necessary to allow businesses the time and flexibility needed to continue innovating with alternative chemicals. Thank you, and I look forward to any questions.
Thank you for your testimony. Next up, we have Assistant Commissioner Kadelka from MPCA. We're going to give you, you request a little more time. We're going to give you a little extra time. Proceed.
Thank you, Chair and committee members. For the record, my name is Kirk Kadelka. I'm Assistant Commissioner with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. We oppose the bill because it moves us backwards in our efforts to reduce PFAS and the resulting releases to the environment and negative impacts to human health. It shouldn't matter whether something is used in a household or a commercial or industrial setting. The exposures and pollutions that result from these products remain no matter what the setting is. This not only will impact commercial and industrial, but it will also bleed over into commercial, consumer products, because it will be very difficult for the agency to implement and enforce a baking sheet that may be used in a home, but said it's marketed for commercial use. It would end up creating even a larger hole in the law. The proposal not only rolls back the 2025 prohibitions for 11 categories, it also affects the 2026 reporting and the 2032 prohibition for remaining materials, remaining products. We've talked before about the, over the next 20 years, it'll cost about $28 million to remove PFAS from wastewater and landfill facilities. In your packet is a map of 20-plus large investigations we're doing with community and private well investigations that have exceedances of PFAS in their drinking water. We estimate this will be over $1 billion for the initial investigation and providing safe drinking water for these. If the concern is a particular essential use in commercial industrial settings, AMAR's law is flexible and already addresses those concerns through a currently unavoidable use determination. It provides the ability for an exemption for uses of essential health, safety, or the function of society for which there are alternatives are not readily available. However, unlike this proposal, it doesn't forever exempt these harmful PFAS chemicals. It will continue to drive innovation and incentivize manufacturers to move away from them over time. Specifically to the reporting and moving back the 2026 reporting date, this would create a number of issues. The first, it would delay important information for consumers making purchasing decisions, and also companies looking to transition away from PFAS. They will not know where it is available. The second is that it would also make it more difficult for manufacturers to comply with the 2032 prohibition. As we've seen, deadlines have spurred companies to find where PFAS is in their products to be able to adjust to upcoming prohibitions. And finally, it would slow down the MPCA's ability to make currently unavoidable use designations because this information is needed for our policy-making decisions. This is something that the industry in the letters in the packet said that we need to move faster on, not slower. Finally, if there is for some reason that we are not able to finish the rule or the database, which we're on schedule to meet by the 2026 deadline, AMAR's law already has flexibility for MPCA to provide more times for manufacturers to report their data. No law change is required to give flexibility for commercial industrial use or reporting. It has already existed in the law. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you for your testimony. Next up, we have Todd Hill. Please identify yourself for the committee and proceed. Yep.
Thank you, Chair Burkle and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Todd Hill with Hill Capital Strategies, and I'm here on behalf of our client SPAN, the Sustainable PFAS Action Network, which is a coalition of PFAS users and producers committed to sustainable risk-based PFAS management. In the interest of time, I'll draw your attention to the letter that my client submitted on behalf of the, to the committee on behalf of this legislation. Just a couple of quick highlights. SPAN strongly supports what we believe are the modest changes contained in House File 1627 as amended. As this legislation advances, SPAN believes that you might also want to reconsider some of Minnesota's other reporting requirements and follow the lead of Maine, which passed the first in the nation reporting law in 2024. Maine reconsidered their broad approach and have now adopted a risk-based reporting law that has significantly limited the scope of reporting. We believe that Minnesota would be better off to align its reporting with the EPA reporting rules. And while it is helpful that the words industrial and commercial are stricken by this proposal, I just want to reassure everybody in this room the definition remains very broad and will still encompass hundreds of thousands of products. And finally, we believe as this legislation advances, Minnesota should further restrict reporting like Maine and eliminate the overly broad 2032 product ban. But thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Last testifier is Tony Quillis. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Tony Quillis, and I have a government affairs public relations firm in St. Paul. And today I'm representing two folks, the AGC as well as the Consumer Technology Association. AGC is a manufacturer and supplier that manufactures and supplies products for medical, automotive, electronic, and architectural industries. And the Consumer Technology Association represents manufacturers, software developers, and retailers all throughout the United States. Both AGC and CTA, along with thousands of companies, are monitoring PFAS registration in the fee rulemaking process here in Minnesota. These thousands of companies sell thousands of products in this state, and we're looking for answers and details and clarity on how they're going to file the reports that are going to be required in January 1st of 2026, the data, and if that data is going to be protected. The amount of data is going to be staggering that has to be required under this law. And the amount of time that it's going to take to acquire that data in a worldwide supply chain is going to be lengthy if we can even find the data and if it's available. One thing of note, I think, in the law that passed in 2023 was there's no de minimis in that law. So even a trace will trigger the reporting requirement for any product sold in this state. So because of the uncertainty and the confusion currently in the rulemaking process and the status of that, we think the focus should be on residential and personal use where the greatest risks and exposure are. Businesses have to be in compliance. We need certainty and clarity and workable guidance on how we're going to meet this law. And we think that's why it's important to make sure to get this reporting requirement right. That's why the legislation will allow the PCA to test the system, ensure the system will be able to protect the data that they get, and will be available for businesses to meet that January 1st, 2026 deadline. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee.
All right. Thank you for your testimony. Members, we're make sure we have time for questions, but if there's anyone in the audience that would like to testify? If not, we'll move to member questions now. Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I want to start by thanking all of the testifiers who are here in person, all of the folks who submitted letters. It's a lot of material, so I feel like I'm still digesting some of that. I think also I'll thank Mr. Quillis specifically because I had a question of what AGC was, so I have a little insight into that. And then I was just trying to look up the SPAN, Sustainable PFAS Action Network, and who that is and what they do. So it looks like Honeywell, Daikin, Intel, different HVAC groups, aerospace industries, semiconductor associations, SEMI, which I'm not sure what that stands for, ARKEMA, applied materials. These aren't necessarily the most instructive names. In Minnesota, we know Honeywell, we know Daikin. And I guess looking at the SPAN letter of support actually was really instructive to me. They had suggestions on how to further exempt products and go back on Amara's law, which I found really interesting. Now, not in my district, but close to my district, there are two different Daikin business places where it employ a lot of people. And I just want to say on the record that I'm concerned for their health, too. I'm concerned for the health and trying to exempt these products from people who are the installers and have their hands in these products when we need them fixed. So I guess it's not compelling to me to change the definition of product, which is what excuse me, I wanted to get to. So that's mentioned in a few of the letters. A few testifiers talked about the definition change of product, and I'm not sure if maybe this is a nonpartisan, just to put you all on the hook here, but what is that change that is happening with that definition of product that the MPCA commissioner also brought up? Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Nonpartisan, General, do you want to go ahead?
Mr. Chair, members, if you're talking about the commercial and industrial change, if you look on line 3.10 of the bill, you'll see that the definition of a product will be changed to remove commercial or industrial use. So products that are manufactured for commercial or industrial use would be removed from the Amara's bill overall.
Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry, I'm looking at both the A1 and the original bill. Can you give that citation again, please?
Sure. Ms. Taylor.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Representative Purcell, it'd be on the original bill, and it's line 3.10. That's the commercial industrial use change, if that's the one you're talking about.
Representative Purcell.
Great. Thank you so much, Ms. Taylor. That is helpful to cite where that is. And I guess it was troubling to me to hear, that it's a very small change and it seems like it could have really potential effects. It was also really interesting for me to hear the agency say that they were not a fan of this change. So I guess I'm wondering maybe to the bill author, where is this where is this coming from? Who are you hearing from that is wanting this bill that you have before us? Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Chair Heintzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Purcell, I hear from stakeholders, folks that are impacted by implementation of the law. Maybe Mr. Quillis would like to further share on that.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Purcell, I think to go to Ms. Taylor, where she pointed us on the definition of product. This is where the confusion for the business community comes in, because when you look at that definition of product and tie it into product component, it says products are manufactured, assembled, packaged, or otherwise prepared for sale to consumers, but yet we include commercial and industrial. And to go back even further from that, when we talk about PFAS, I used to testify that it was somewhere between 4,000 and 6,000 chemicals. Others have testified it's upwards of 8,000 to 10,000, and there's that many uses of them. Not all of them are the same. And that's where some of the discussion comes in, because some of them don't dissolve in water. And so when we have that discussion about, wastewater treatment or stormwater, there are some of these products that don't, they just don't dissolve in water. They're not exposed to humans. And so trying to, that confusion among the business community on, okay, is this commercial? Is this industrial? Is this sold to consumers? Is it a business-to-business transaction? That's where some of the confusion is. And we want to help the agency by thinking that we should go through and focus on the greatest risk and exposure for consumers, and try and do that, and then so that the businesses, once we get that clarity from them, so that we can report what they're needing. But we need that clarity from them, and right now we don't have that, and there's a date coming up on us, January 1st of 2026, and we want to comply with that law.
Representative Purcell, follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is just my final follow-up. So it sounds like the stakeholders are not everyday Minnesotans who we have bioaccumulated PFAS in our bodies, but maybe folks who Mr. Quillis represents for the chamber. I believe in these companies. I believe we can find innovation. And I guess my question is then the accountability. Is we're looking at, all these different uses of these products, but then who holds the bag for a 20-year-old dying and all of these ways that, not just PFAS. We happen to be talking about PFAS at this moment, but lots of other things in our water and in our systems that once we know better, we need to do better. And it's hard for me to hear that then it's the state who's accountable when we know who the bad actors and the polluters are, and our job is to protect people. So I'm sorry, Representative Heitzman, I can't support your bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I want to state very clearly that my stakeholders are the people of Northeast Minneapolis and Southeast Como. And I will also say that as the education policy DFL lead, my stakeholders are the children of Minnesota. And so I have a few questions for the MPCA, who also serves the stakeholders, the people of Minnesota. So I don't know if Assistant Commissioner Kadelka can come back, because I do have a few questions.
Assistant Commissioner, identify yourself again for the committee, please, and proceed. Representative Jordan, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Commissioner Kadelka, putting you on the spot a lot today. We heard some testimony about like fluoropolymers, and there's plenty of people who use that word all throughout our packets here. Can you talk a little bit about what that is and what effect that has on humans?
Assistant Commissioner.
Mr. Chair and committee members, for the record, my name is Kirk Adelka, Assistant Commissioner with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. Thank you for the question. I know the statements have been made that they are inert, and I think that's where we disagree with them. And the science shows that, too. If we go back and looking at the issues I mentioned before, the creation of it, the use of it, and the disposal of it, the fluoropolymers are made from many of the PFAS that folks are saying are the ones that we need to stop using. They're being used in the production of this. So we have releases from the production facilities, industrial or commercial facilities. It's also mentioned that these are inert and they don't break down. The science is actually showing the opposite. It's breaking down and leaching into TFA and other ultra-short PFAS chemicals. These chemicals are also showing science showing that the mammals, reproductive, and also liver issues because of being impacted on it, to the point where there are other countries already creating drinking water standards for these breakdown chemicals. So it's not only at the act of use, it's the production and disposal which are also creating the problems linking to the releases to the environment and human health issues.
Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Assistant Commissioner. I also had a question just generally about this bill is limited. This bill removes the commercial and industrial use aspect of this. Do everyday Minnesotans come into contact with commercial or industrial use products that could be containing PFAS, whether it's in the manufacture, the use, or the disposal of those products? Does that have an impact on everyday Minnesotans' drinking water or ability to eat fish? Or how do we come into contact, like, if we're not, you know, necessarily in the factory floor with these products?
Chair Heisman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And earlier in the conversation, Representative Purcell was mentioning letters. I would refer you to a number of letters, specifically one that mentions some of the challenges for medical devices. And I think that there's lots of examples where everyday Minnesotans are depending on these technologies, and there's challenges, as we're hearing about today. The common goal is to eliminate these things from human contact. The challenge is how do we replace those things in a timely way and get at the alternatives without hurting people. And that's really what I'm trying to get at with the bill. It's earlier in House File 81, things as challenging as fuel lines, and in this bill, safety equipment and things that people depend on every day to get to work, to get to school, and trying to eliminate those things from human contact is a challenge. We agree, and we're working towards that together, I hope. I think this bill provides an opportunity for us to get there in a way that doesn't negatively impact whether it's your constituents or my constituents. Generally, I think we're talking about making sure that we have best possible outcomes for Minnesotans, period.
Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Heinzman. That actually leads me into one of my next questions, which is for Assistant Commissioner Kadelka. Can you talk a little bit can you talk a little bit about the exemption process that is already in place and whether or not medical devices are already an exempt product?
Assistant Commissioner.
Mr. Chair and committee members, there are exemptions, and those do include medical devices from the prohibitions. They would be required to do the reporting.
Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then, Commissioner Kadelka, if I have a like, let's say I'm a manufacturer of a product, like there is a product that I haven't, you know, a need that there's a defense like implication or a health implication. There is a can you describe the process for people under the MPCA that they could apply for exemptions? My understanding is that's something that your agency handles.
Assistant Commissioner.
Mr. Chair and committee members, the law does create a currently unavoidable use designation process through the law to allow for when there are risks to public safety or human health. That is something that we're building out. We started a rulemaking to define that in a little bit more detail. The difference between it and the bill, though, it does provide extensions. It doesn't exempt them forever from having to move to alternatives. And that is one of our concerns, is that there is no push to finding alternatives that forever exempts them.
All right. Representative Jordan, follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Assistant Commissioner. Yeah, I'm going to be a very easy no on this. You know, like I said, my stakeholders are people. And I've been thinking a lot, listening to testimony from students about a good friend of mine that I lost in late December to cancer. And, you know, I've been thinking a lot about her. Many of you probably know I'm talking about Senator Dedzic. But I've sat in this committee for years and heard children come and testify how they had to miss school because they had to have a baseball-sized tumor removed from their brain. And that wasn't Amara that testified. That was a different student at her high school. It has struck me over the years how Amara Strandy was not an outlier at her high school. And that's wrong. That is not what we should be doing. We should not be making it so we have cancer clusters that are associated with high schools. We should not be having communities where they have to worry about their water. We shouldn't have a community like mine where constituents are advised by the MPCA to not eat fish that they catch in the Mississippi River, which is the only body of water in my district. And that's because of PFAS. It's not something that's just found in nature. This is something that is put into nature. These are not natural, and they are forever chemicals. We should not be hearing this bill. This is not a bill that will make America healthy again. That is certainly for sure. So I really don't know why we're hearing this, and I think it's a really easy no for all committee members to be on this bill. Thanks.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. South St. Paul's well number 4 has been identified as having PFOA, one of the worst, PFOA, concentration that exceeds EPA maximum contaminant level. Current four-quarter average compliance concentration of PFOA in well number 4 is 7.4 parts per trillion, while the EPA's MCL is set at 4.0 parts per trillion. 39% well number 4 accounts for approximately 39% of South St. Paul's active pumping capacity and can meet 63% of the existing and projected maximum daily demands. Granulated carbon may provide the best treatment option, with estimated cost at $6.6 million. That the public will have to pick up the cost. That's just one community in my district, which includes St. Paul Park, Newport, Cottage Grove, the cluster of contamination from the company that has made profits that poisoned all of us. So we passed prevention, and prevention is better than cleanup. We passed prevention, and as always happens, always, the industry comes back to start nibbling it away. Let's have this exemption. Let's have that exemption. Just a little bit. It's too hard. Let's cut a little bit more. It's too hard. Let's exempt a little bit more. It's too hard. But the bill keeps coming due. The bill keeps coming due for the public to have to pick up the cost for the water, for the death, for the illness. The bill keeps coming due. And the bill will keep coming due. For the rest of our lives, we're going to have this battle in front of us, whether we're sitting at these chairs or anybody else's, because we will try and there will be a reaction from industry. And we see the ultimate consequence at the federal level, where I'm not sure if there's any regulation anymore. So then it falls on us. And those same lobbyists that are out there in D.C. getting exactly what they want will fly in here and push the people who have to make the choices here. So we do have to figure out the solution. And the costs are immense. Immense. We had whistleblowers on 3M at PCA 20 years ago, 23 years ago. 23 years ago, before I got here. None of this is new. The battle just continues in terms of money, profit, poison, public picking up the cost. So here we are again. I'll be voting no. Who's going to pay for the cost of cleaning up our water? Who's going to pay for the cost of the people who are poisoned? It always comes back to the public. And the industry comes from the profit to make the changes to keep continuing on those costs. We have to do better.
Any other questions for members? Lead Fisher.
Thank you, Chair Burkle. First of all, I want to go mention we'll want a roll call on this.
Roll call requested, roll call granted.
Thank you. A question I have, and this would probably be toward the testifiers, toward the MPCA, how do you define what is commercial, residential, or industrial? And where I'm going to use as an example to start with, cooking equipment. You know, if it's used in a restaurant and sold for residential also, is that commercial? Now we've got a loophole where you now can have PFAS anywhere?
Go ahead. Mr. Chairman, yeah. Representative Fisher, cookware has been banned as of January 1st of 2025 containing PFAS in the state of Minnesota. So it wouldn't matter whether it was residential or commercial because it's already been banned.
Representative Fisher.
You may have said it's banned, but right here we're making an exception for commercial and industrial. So somebody could, what I'm just saying is if somebody gets a smart enough lawyer, they could say, well, it may have been banned here, but you know, for commercial or industrial use, where does that apply? You know, and that's kind of where I'm coming at is we're setting up these conflicts out here. Somebody's going to get a lawyer, and if you get the right judge, it could end up walking right through there.
Is that a question for
Mr. Quillis? It's more of a statement.
Yeah, okay.
And in terms of commercial lines and industrial lines, when you're talking about some of the other equipment that we just added earlier, we were talking about ATVs. ATVs are used residential, but they're also used in commercial areas when people are out managing whether it's their farms or whether they're out in areas where you've got golf courses use a lot of off-the-road vehicles out there. So as you have that, you've got crossover there. So how does that apply to ATVs? Are they commercial or residential?
Mr. Chair.
Chair Heintzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know the two bills are similar, and I think that's fine. We can talk about that. But House File 81 was specifically getting at juvenile products, and I think that was the goal there, not a commercial application of a juvenile product that I'm aware of in that market.
Representative Fisher.
Thank you. Well, and you're talking about the juvenile product there, but I'm also talking about the adult products out here. Is we're saying, well, we've got to, we're striking commercial and industrial. What I'm saying is there are products that we're saying in residential areas, you can't have PFAS, but those same products can also be used in commercial and industrial uses. So if those same products are being used in commercial or industrial uses, are they now exempt from the PFAS regulations?
Chair Heintzman.
I would defer to my testifier.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Fisher, herein lies the problem for a reporting requirement that's going to be showing up 8-9 months from now on what that is. When you read back to that, it says otherwise prepared for sale to customers or consumers, excuse me. Is a seal gasket or a fuel line that's contained inside a product, is that for sale to consumers when we're talking about just the seal or gasket? There's a mention in one of these letters that one of the semiconductor companies has 107 O-rings. Is that for sale to consumers? That's why the confusion for us in the business community is trying to figure out what we're going to have to report there. And I think that when we try and draw that line to commercial and industrial, for sale to consumers is key. and also about dealing with internal components, because even if you go back and look at the agency's report on the recommendation that was the A1 amendment in here, internal components pose less threat of direct human exposure. So an internal component, for me, is interpreted to be commercial and industrial and not for sale to consumers. And that's the rub, to go back to your litigation of who's going to report here coming up. We need that clarity, and that's why asking the agency to go through, take the time, and try and clarify for businesses, because we want to be compliant. We have to be in compliance. And so trying to figure out that complexity that exists right now is why we're asking for that timeline to go out and to find that definition of what that exactly is between commercial, industrial, and personal and residential.
Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Chair Burkle. And the reason I'm pressing on in here is because having done other bills that got into this area between residential, commercial, and industrial, by the time we got done taking a look at it, when we tried to open up like that, we found out what we did is we gutted the whole bill and meant that whatever you had, commercial, industrial, these other products also be used that were in residential are used in commercial and industrial, and so therefore the argument could be used that now everything is wide open. This is why I'm pushing back on this, because there is so much in the residential area that is also being used in commercial or industrial areas that it all of a sudden could open up and gut the entire bill here. This is why I'm concerned and pushing back on what I am.
Chair Heitzman.
Mr. Chair, I see that we're getting towards the end. I'm wondering if we're at that point, I could renew my motion.
If I could.
Lead Fisher.
If I could, I know that the MPCA has a comment here. Okay. I'd like to hear from them.
Assistant Commissioner.
Chair and committee members, just to be clear, the change of the definition of product in 2025 rolls back the cookware for consumer and industrial, because it is in the word product, and the product then carries over to that deadline. So it would roll that back. In terms of the definition of consumer, and that we have covered this in our webinars, and that has been defined there. Actually, right now, how it's done, it's because it covers all those uses, there is no need to define the differences. This actually will make it harder, because we will not know the difference and those lines, and those lines are not drawn in the law. Thank you.
All right. With that, Chair Heitzman, would you like to wrap up your bill and we can proceed?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'll be extremely brief, since we here are at the top of the hour. Just thank members and those that came to testify and speak to House File 1627. Mr. Chair, I would renew my motion that House File 1627, as amended, be re-referred to the Commerce, Finance, and Policy Committee.
Okay. Chair Heitzman has renewed his motion to re-refer House File 1627 to Commerce. Roll call requested. Please take the roll.
Chair Heitzman?
Yes.
Vice Chair Burkle?
Yes.
Lee Fisher?
No.
Representative Falconer? Representative Finke, excused. Representative Gilman?
Yes.
Representative Hansen?
No.
Representative Jacob?
Yes.
Representative Jordan?
No.
Representative Nelson?
Yeah.
Representative Purcell?
Purcell, no.
Representative Schultz?
Yes.
Representative Walross?
We have 7 ayes and 5 nays. 5 nays. Motion passes. Thank you, members. With that, our meeting is adjourned.